Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Braddon, and we are joined, as always, on Monday evening by our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how'd you have a good time? Did you have a good time enjoying the weekend of college football action?
Mike, I had a blast this weekend. Everybody always says, you know, oh, there's not that many ranked matchups or whatever. That's when the action is at its best. What a fantastic weekend of college football again. Remember, as always, to enjoy them because they go by fast. And pretty soon we'll be in December begging for like an Idaho versus South Carolina game. So, man, fired up from a great weekend and excited to talk to the hardest working man in the SEC, SEC Mike.
Yeah. Hey, great point, Stephen. Yeah. Again, that's why we have you on, because you make the best points out there. But anybody that tries to tell you, oh, it's ho-hum Saturday, buddy, that's when you know you need to buckle up and prepare for perhaps the wildest week of your life. So, hey, before we get into it, as always, Stephen, I got to remind the cousins, we are brought to you this football season by MyBookie, the online sportsbook. Go check them out. MyBookie.ag. That's the website. And the promo code is SEC for a first time guaranteed wager. Whatever you want to put in, up to $500, MyBookie's going to guarantee it for you. Let's say you put, like, you're out here and you're like Steven, and you put everything you own on Arch Manning and Texas to beat Ohio State. Well, you would have got that wrong, right? But if you use that promo code SEC over at MyBookie, they give you the money right back after you lose it, exactly what you put in, so you can keep on playing over at MyBookie. And heck, if you do win, you listen to Shane, don't listen to me. If you listen to Shane and you win your bets, you get to keep the money too. So you cannot lose over at MyBookie. Go check them out. And our friends over at Tennessee Legend. Steven, I don't know if you saw my power rankings. It was fun. I think I had too much Tennessee Legend though, because, man, I went damn near an hour, couple whiskeys deep. And I was slurring my words. I was speaking some nonsense, but I had a good time because I kept it responsible. And as soon as I was done, I went to bed. I didn't do anything else dangerous. So, shout out Tennessee Legends. They're powering us this weekend, whether we like it or not. You know what?
If Joey Aguilar beats Georgia, is he already a Tennessee legend?
He's going to have to get his own bottle over there. You know what?
It's a future NIL deal, right?
Hey, shout out JR, the legend. He's back, Steven. He's here. I think he's here for you. I don't think they're here for me
legend
anymore.
Legend, cousin JR has done it again.
Shout out JR. He gifted a membership to CarDoc. CarDoc, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, thank you for the assist there, Steven. We also got Michael Dunlap on a scale of 1 to 10. What are the odds of our 17-year streak of kicking Vanderbilt's ass ends? Oh, buddy. Yeah, we'll get to that game here in a little bit. But, you know, maybe just for Michael Dunlap gave us a donation here, Stephen. Maybe we could briefly talk on the fact that I don't know about you, but I'm a lot more concerned for South Carolina than I was a week or two ago.
I am too. The hardest thing I think about South Carolina is you had the Virginia Tech game, then you had the short turnaround time and probably an opponent you didn't spend a whole lot of time preparing for, given what's ahead with Vanderbilt and Missouri. Also, I think sometimes like when these games are storms, delayed, the weather, you wonder if that just throws off the whole operation. So I am a little bit more worried, especially since they both have a common opponent. They both played Virginia Tech, and Vanderbilt was very impressive in the second half of that game, especially going into Blacksburg and just destroying Virginia Tech in the second half. So I think my concern level has certainly gone up. I also wonder if, like, we probably didn't see South Carolina's best effort on Saturday. We're likely to see some bounce back there, but I think it's probably going to be a much closer game, certainly than last year's was.
Right. And man, we might have some. We were last week, we were ready to run Alabama off. Not anymore, Steven, because Steven Up, he's back. He's gifting memberships. We love Alabama now that Steven Up's here.
For them boys in Tuscaloosa, it's Steven Up. Roll Tide.
Thank you, Steven Up. He's gifted Kyle Mormon. Kyle, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, courtesy of old Steven Up. And then another cousin that we love is old Gunner. He's flying high, Steven, because LSU is undefeated and looking like one of the best, if not the best team in the SEC. He's donated to Sue's I'm going to butcher this one, sound like Shane. Sue Maccabe. Sue's, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, thanks to Gunner Ward. We appreciate you, buddy. And then shout out Emily. Steven gave us $20 because she's got our own cowbell here. Donating some of my Prize Picks winnings as a huge thanks to Mr. Sip for those badass cowbells. SEC fans are truly elite. It's a great day to be an Auburn Tiger. I bet even Mike would think so. Hell yeah. Ward Am. You know what? They're 2-0. They whooped mighty Ball State over the weekend.
Hey, I told you to go all in on Arch Manning, Parker Livingston in the Prize Picks.
Yeah,
you thought it was Arch Manning propaganda. I was just trying to give you winners from last week. But man, that was Auburn is, I think, what, in the top 25 now. I know I've moved them into the top 25, but that's a great start to the season, taking care of business against Ball State. The big win over Baylor looks better after Baylor beat SMU in a comeback. So things are going to get interesting in a few weeks with that Auburn-Oklahoma game. I cannot wait for that one.
Yeah, me neither. And I also can't wait, Stephen. Oh, man, these gifts are coming in. Shout out Austin Wayne. He gifted E. Burgess. E., welcome to
the family.
Courtesy of Austin Wayne. Thank you so much. And Emily's back. Emily, we don't deserve you. Just like we don't deserve Hugh Freeze in this conference. He's just too good for us. Emily, shout out. She gifted a membership to Justin. Justin, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, thank you so much, Emily. And last but certainly not least, maybe the best name out there, Buttered Sausage. That's Shane's code handle there. This is really just Shane, I think. Buttered Sausage gifted Austin McLaren a membership. Austin, welcome to
the family.
All right, so let's get into it, Stephen. A lot of reactions. I'm dying to know what you have to say about the weekend in the SEC. A nearly flawless weekend. Thanks, Billy. But aside from the Gators, you know, what was maybe the most impressive performance of the weekend out of the conference, in your opinion?
Mike, where do we start? It was a great weekend for the conference, if we forget about Florida for 5 minutes here. How about Oklahoma on Saturday night? And I think we got the verdict we wanted to. We wondered about John Mateer and how this offense would acclimate to the SEC. Answered. There's no doubt about it. John Mateer, I think he's moving some places as the Heisman front runner. That win was significant. Just coming into the year after the two losing seasons in 3 years for Brent Venables, you go out and get the OC, you get the quarterback, you win a high-profile game against Michigan. I think that answered a lot of questions. Also, this victory by Oklahoma raises another question for me, which is when you start thinking about the SEC and thinking about what's transpired this season, we'll see about Georgia this weekend. We've seen Texas play Ohio State. We've seen LSU pick up a big victory. I am wondering if that top tier of teams shouldn't be expanded a little bit, because Oklahoma's got the defense. They've got a quarterback now who's a baller. We saw those crazy, awesome throws that he was making. So just something that's been on my mind about, we came into the season about the middle tier of the SEC and wondering, we've seen Florida slide. We've seen Oklahoma win. I have Oklahoma projected to make the playoff after week two. There's a long way to go, but I'm buying Oklahoma a lot of stock after that win on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Stephen, and you kind of went a step further. I did want to ask you if Oklahoma is a legitimate national championship contender, not the favorite or anything like that, but given this defense, given just what we've seen from John Mateer in two games, we know he will likely continue to improve. The fact they rolled out four new offensive linemen, that's a recipe for disaster against a front like Michigan's. Yet, you know, I wouldn't have given them like an A+ on the offensive line, but certainly a passing grade. And again, if that unit continues to get better, would you? And I think, you know, clearly you just said it yourself. You think they can make the playoff? Do you think Oklahoma should be on the list of? I'll expand it to SEC champion, because I think you kind of tipped your hand there, and perhaps even national champion if they continue to progress.
The SEC champion can definitely win the national championship. So if that's Oklahoma, I think they're in that conversation. I still need to see a little bit more. I have some concerns about the offensive line and rushing attack, kind of like you mentioned. Of course, some of that could be, hey, they've maybe have the right offensive line now, and this group continues to get better. I think what scares me, if I'm like an opposing coach and thinking about Oklahoma, they've got this quarterback in Mateer who's clearly carrying this offense, and you can only get better from here. Like, you get more time with Deion Burks, Keontez Lewis, Satanga at receiver. There's a lot of meat still on the bone for this offense, and Mateer getting better. Defense is good. It feels like there's a lot of room to grow here. I don't know if I'd put Oklahoma in that tier one category right now, but I've got them like pretty solid, like tier two contender. I still think your LSU, Texas, Georgia, those are your front runners. But I've certainly given Oklahoma a pretty considerable bump after what we saw so far this season.
Mm-hmm. And then if Oklahoma was perhaps the most impressive win over the weekend, who's next on that list for Steven?
It's a toss up here, Mike, because I love two performances on Saturday. Let's go to Starkville, because Mississippi State deserves some love. Mike, you and I talked about this on Wednesday. I'm not sure Arizona State knew what they were getting into by going to that trip to Starkville. They were not ready for the hostile crowd that Starkville had. And man, the atmosphere, the fans, kudos to all those guys, because the atmosphere was unbelievable and it made a difference. And so I love what this win could do for Mississippi State. We talk about like proof of concept, validation. Like, Mississippi State got the big win. They've had to fight through a lot since Jeff Lebby took over the program the last couple of years. We wondered, to come into this year, would we see progress? The schedule was tough. I think beating the defending Big 12 champion, a team that still has a lot of talent and has a quarterback in Sam Levitt that a lot of people think could be a high draft pick next year, is a big deal. You saw the Blake Chapin connection. The defense also showed up, limiting Arizona State to 82 passing yards. So I think this is kind of clear validation for Mississippi State that the program is moving in the right direction and can kind of build some proof of concept and continue to build on this momentum that we've seen at Mississippi State under Jeff Lebby.
And shout out our guy, Coleman Hustler. We always believed in you.
Yeah.
I mean, Mississippi State's defense won them that football game, a late stand, making that quarterback, Sam Levitt, who's so touted. I mean, he had more picks than he had touchdowns in this game. So they were paramount to getting this win. And if Arizona State punches in that goal-to-go situation late in the game, I'm almost certain they would have won this football game, but it was holding them to a field goal, gave Mississippi State life, where they were just trying to tie the game when they ended up winning it. You know, all the credit in the world to Jeff Lebby and Blake Chapin, but the defense has come miles ahead of where they were last year. So that's a big shout out to Coleman Hustler. You know what?
Absolutely. I mean, we gave him a hard time last year, so we got to give him his credit this year. This defense looks significantly better. Did suffer a little bit of a setback. It looks like Bull Whitson's going to be out for the rest of the year. That's a pretty big loss given the impact he's made through the first couple weeks of the season, but it doesn't feel like this group is a massive liability anymore. And you go with an offense that has the firepower, Anthony Evans, Brennan Thompson, I mean, Fluff Bothwell. I mean, they've got playmakers, they've got a good quarterback in Blake Chapin. So now you compare this up. Like, we knew Lebby can produce points, but you can get some stops in some of these games to make these games interesting. You know, I think a bowl game ought to be you just beat Arizona State. That should be a realistic goal for this team at this point.
Yeah. And as you look down the schedule, I mean, we'll certainly talk some Florida on this episode, but that is no longer a certain, yeah. I mean, they might be favored to swap by the time that game rolls around. And if you think I'm kidding, or I mean, just look at what Florida's got before that, at LSU, at Miami, Texas, and at Texas A&M. Yeah, I mean, we've got a long time before we get there, but what is another team that really impressed you over the weekend?
Let's go with Missouri, Mike. I love the border war getting back together, the hostilities, the Missouri fan who gave up the opportunity to kick a field goal just to kick it at the Kansas sideline. Talk about rivalries, man. That's one of the best parts of college football. But I think a couple things stood out here. Like, if you were just like looking at the scoreboard and you see 42-31, I don't know that score really kind of indicates how like dominant. I wouldn't say dominant, but more like Missouri could have won this game more convincingly. Nearly 600 yards of offense. They lost the fumble that was returned for a touchdown, but Prabula was awesome. Roberts and Hardy, Kevin Coleman, all those guys showed out again. And the defense did just enough against a dangerous quarterback in Jalen Daniels to put this game away. So kudos to Missouri. Love the rivalry coming back. Great atmosphere in Columbia. Big time win. Great performances from all the newcomers as well.
Yeah, that was a wild game, wasn't it? So with all the hype and all surrounding it, I mean, there's a lot of teams, Stephen, that I believe the score, if I'm not mistaken, was like, wasn't it 21-6 or something like that at one point where Kansas was winning. A lot of teams, you know, fold under, you know, that's a difficult spot to be in when your fans are demanding you to win a damn game and you're down to that caliber. But they were really only down because of mistakes they were making. So I'm sure the message on the sideline was just, you know, clean this up and we'll win this game. Very clutch. A lot of fourth downs converted. Bo Prabula, I cannot be more impressed with him, particularly as a passer. I mean, call me crazy, Steven, but he might be the most accurate passer in the conference right now.
You know, it's funny you mention that because there was a throw in the game and I'm forgetting the down and distance, but I can see it. It's almost like he gets the snap and he throws it to the other side of the field and it's thrown just in the only exact spot, like between two defenders, that his guy could catch it. And I thought about that and was like, man, all this offseason questioning, you know, whether or not he could be the passer in the SEC and part-time to full-time and in two games, I mean, not even really two games, like five quarters, he's proven that that's not even a concern. So I have been really impressed just with the accuracy, the high level of play already, keeping him healthy, priority number one for Missouri, given Sam Horn's injury, some of the offensive line things we saw. But I think if you're Missouri, you got to be like ecstatic with the way Prabula has played, because I think that's got to raise potentially where the floor and maybe even the ceiling for this team this year.
Yeah, and, you know, again, we could throw all the praise in the world at a lot of facets of Missouri's program, but I'm going to give a special shout-out to the offensive coordinator, Kirby Moore, who 2 years ago was a huge catalyst for them winning 11 games. I don't really know what happened last year. I think a lot of it was quarterback injured and all that, but, again, we could sit here and make excuses. New quarterback, new running backs, new receivers, reshuffled offensive line that they literally had to reposition during camp. The fact that they looked this good two games into the season, I think Kirby Moore is doing a hell of a job. And in my opinion, he's probably the best offensive probably the best coordinator 2 weeks into the SEC season.
I think I would agree with that. I mean, I think if anything, kind of wondered what to expect out of him coming into this year, given that the offense underachieved last season, and you have a quarterback making his first like full-time start with all these new pieces, some offensive line questions, and this is what they're doing. I mean, Kansas defense is not one of the best in the Big 12, but it's not bad either. It's not like, you know, as bad as Mississippi State was last year. So the fact that they sliced them up like that on Saturday, that's a really good sign for this team going forward. So I'm fully on the Bo Prabula hype train going out here.
Mm-hmm. Hey, how about any love, Stephen, for, we've talked about this team a little bit here, but how about the Fighting Diego Pavias, man, who, again, they got down 17-7. This is my favorite stat of the weekend, 17-7, and then won the game 44-20, just absolutely obliterated Virginia Tech. And this was on the road. This was after a sloppy start, couple turnovers, two turnovers in the first three possessions for the Commodores. But, man, Vanderbilt looks like $1 million to me.
I think, you know, you mentioned this like with Kansas and Missouri, but stopping yourself, like Vanderbilt was doing that with the turnovers. And then once they stopped that, I mean, complete domination, Mike, in the second half, outscored Virginia Tech 34-0. Outgained Virginia Tech 321-21. So great. I mean, Pavia was great. I think we're seeing the kind of depth of the weapons. We've seen, you know, Young scored late at running back. You had Richardson who stepped up at receiver at transfer. And then, of course, the defense for Vanderbilt, which looks deeper on paper and the way they've played this year, to shut out Virginia Tech in the second half. Like, how many times, I guess maybe the easiest way to think about this is, how many times, like, has Vanderbilt gone on the road like that and just punched a pretty good opponent like that in the mouth of the second half? Like, not like, you know, FCS or G5 at home or anything. Virginia Tech's not bad. And so that to dominate them, like, that's a really good sign of where this team is right now.
Yeah. I mean, heck, last year they lost to Georgia State on the road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, this is just the latest sign of how far they've come under Clark Lee. So I'm very impressed with Vanderbilt. They got to keep it going. We'll talk a lot about that South Carolina game coming up. But any other teams really impress you over the weekend?
Mike, I think it's worth noting Ole Miss, just because it's an SEC road win. Like, sometimes finding ways to win when you're not playing at your best is a good thing. And I think there's a lot of room for Ole Miss to improve across the board. But to go on the road, get a 7-point win against a team that gave you all kinds of trouble last season. You had a little bit of late adversity with the Austin Simmons injury. Not the most prettiest win for Lane Kiffin, but you'll take it.
Yeah, any concern on old Austin Simmons, though? I mean, he looked shaky early. Now he's got 4 interceptions on the season after just 2 games. 2 in each game he's had. But, again, not the end of the world. I'd rather my quarterback start shaky and finish strong, which is what he did. And like you said, they got it done. So I'm not panicked. But now we're going up against Arkansas this week. And if you throw multiple interceptions, that's going to be a recipe for old Talen Green to light you up, and you may get yourself in a hole you can't climb out of.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike, because I think you look at the margin for error, like the next 3 opponents, Ole Miss is going to play Talen Green at Arkansas. I think Tulane is pretty tough. Also, you get Garrett Nussmeier from LSU. Like, so your margin for error is going to be a lot smaller going forward if you're Austin Simmons. So I'm a little concerned, but I'm not too concerned, just simply because you're making your first road start against a team that's given Lane Kiffin some trouble. I could see maybe you're working out some things early in the season. I think the talent is there for Austin Simmons. I think the question is, like, how fast does it get up to the level they need to contend for the playoff? And I think that's what we'll find out in these next couple games.
So it sounds like you're saying, Steven, you're not superstitious, but you're a little stitious.
Yes, there you go.
Okay. All right, any other, before we get into this week's power, or excuse me, panic meter?
Mike, I think that was probably the highlights of the weekend. I think it was good to see, like, if you're Auburn, if you're Alabama, if you're Tennessee, just take care of business. Like, put up a big number on the scoreboard, play a lot of people. That you didn't want to have a close call. And I think Arkansas as well, like, just taking care of business was a good sign for those teams.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we said all these nice things. I think everybody knows where we got to go next when we start with Steven's panic meter. Where are you going, and how high is that freaking meter? Has the meter broken?
Mike, I think the meter might be broken at Florida. I'm setting the panic meter at 10. So Billy Napier, 20-20 through 40 games, 10-14 in SEC play. Mike, you tell me. It's hard to find progress, right?
Yeah. Hey, anybody that missed it, I tweeted out the stats. I don't know if I still have it. Oh yeah, here, I got it. So you said it yourself right there. After 40 games, 20-20. Here's the last coaches at Florida who basically were all run off. After 40 games, Mullen 31-9, Jim McElwain 22-12. He didn't make it to 40 because he got fired. But hell, he even had more than 20 wins, and again he didn't make it to game 40. Muschamp 24-16. So again, that better than old Billy. And then of course Urban Meyer 31-9, throwing a national championship while we're at it. But again, it it's one. One failure after another, and it's just the same old lack of execution. I really do think Billy Napier is a really good program builder Sunday through Friday. And then on Saturday, there's just a massive disconnect. And I'll tell you probably his biggest problem, and I'm sure you saw this, Stephen, and maybe the Cousins may have missed it. He was asked And it's not much you could really do in the middle of the season anyway, but he was asked about if he's going to continue being the offensive play caller. And he got pretty adamant that, you know, that's not the issue. And I'm not saying that is like the issue, but there's a lot of these coaches. And I think the best example is Eli Drinkwitz. When he gave up play calling and he hired a quality offensive coordinator, we just gave a shout out to Kirby Moore. That was the turning point for Missouri's program. And that has been a turning point for many programs where these coaches don't want to give up, you know, what got them there. And I understand that logic, but I think it's really, really hurting Billy Napier, who, when Florida's on defense, I hear he's generally not even watching the game because he's over there coaching up the offense, which that's fine if you're Urban Meyer, Steve Spurrier, and you're kicking ass. But if you're 20-20, you've got to change something.
And at a place like Florida, where it's not a like 4 to 5 year rebuild, like you can go out and get top ranked recruiting class and you don't have to bargain shop in the transfer portal. Like you can go out and get the best of the best, much like LSU did. I also think like when you look at this offense, I mean, it's like 5.8 yards per play so far, and it's at the bottom of the SEC outside of, I think, Kentucky. And that's against Long Island, and South Florida is much better on defense this year than they were last year. I think what worries me is like there's a lack of big plays. You know, Jaden Baugh early in that game, he rips off a couple big runs. And then after that, it was like, you know, it's like he almost needed more than, was it 18 carries to get going. And there's just that lack of big play. It's like a very, the offense seems very stale to me. It almost seems like it needs a little bit of jolt. And to your point on the play caller, like that is the one card that you could play now. Last year it was, well, DJ Lagway's waiting in the wings. Now he could turn over play calling duties. And if he wants to be that great program CEO, that's kind of the last thing. Like he has done a good job of trying to rebuild this program, get the recruiting going, all the off-field stuff that you need. But it's gone to the same things over and over. Like offense has been lackluster at times. Where's the big plays? You've got DJ Lagway, one of the most talented quarterbacks in college football. You just scored 16 points against South Florida. So I think some soul searching needs to be done offensively and just kind of looking ahead at like where this goes. I mean, this schedule does not get any easier. I think 8 of their 10 remaining opponents are against ranked teams. The only ones that aren't are Kentucky, who's on the road, and a Mississippi State team that is considerably moving up the power rankings after that win over Arizona State. But if you have the same problems that continue to show up, the offensive line has been an issue too, I think, at times this year, a group that's supposed to be one of the best in college football. We heard last year is supposed to be the best roster. Didn't work out that way. It's end of the year. This year is supposed to be the best roster, and now we're talking about a loss to South Florida. I don't think that's a great sign for Billy Napier.
No, shout out Junior. He gave us $5. The end of the South Florida game was like the greatest hits of Billy's shortcomings. Clock management was awful.
Stupid penalties.
Not only that, but there was the punt where the snap was so bad that it went over the punter's head and it resulted in a safety. And again, does that cost you a game? It shouldn't against South Florida. That literally was the difference. It was a 2-point ball game. So that killed them. And, you know, they had a big return that set up, one touchdown drive in that game, Stephen. It was a 20-yard touchdown drive, and it was set up by a kick return. But then they had opportunities there. They had the momentum. And then they go 3-and-out, and then they went 3-and-out, and it was ball game there. So, yeah, I think Junior kind of hit it on the head. Penalties killed him, too. I don't think that's necessarily on Napier, but – I mean, we're in year 4. We can't be blaming friggin' penalties for everything. You know what?
What did you think about that last drive, too, where they threw the ball on first down? And, I mean, obviously, South Florida could have scored, but I still think you've got right. Jaden Baugh on this guy, offensive line. Why not try to push it and, you know?
Well, I'm glad you said that because I got this friggin' guy who's a hammer named Jaden Baugh who was whipping butt all day. Yeah, that made no sense to me. But again, a lot of the stuff he does makes no sense to me. You know what?
Yeah. I mean, Mike, that's kind of the best way to sum it up is there's a lot of small things that add up to a very puzzling picture of why a roster the last 2 years that's been considered, this is the best team that they've had. This is the best team they've had. They had the finish last year. You've got this quarterback in DJ Lagway, who's could be one of the best in the country. And we're sitting here with a 500 record and trying to figure out how in the heck did they lose to South Florida. Of course, they could turn it around this week and beat LSU, and all this is moot.
Yeah, but I think it's safe to say at this point in time, not that his numbers are horrible. You know, you shouldn't just look at the numbers. Watch a game for yourself. This is a young quarterback that looks rusty, that looks hesitant, that's not completely on the same page with all his receivers. And this is why we highlighted it all off season. And, you know, it wasn't just us, but this is why we were calling attention to him missing spring, missing most of fall. You know, Billy, you know, they put out the clip, Steven. Oh my God. Remember, he threw it 10 yards. He's fine. What, you idiot, stop talking about this. This is why we're doing it. Because again, I didn't think it would catch him by South Florida, but I thought it could catch him LSU. And now all of a sudden Miami looks good. So, yeah, I mean, it's a calamity down there in Gainesville, and they cleaned it up last year. This next 4 weeks, this is their opportunity to clean it up this year. And this might literally be the toughest 4-game stretch anyone faces this year.
I think that's the hard part for Florida, is that this stretch seems harder than the one last year. It almost seems like it's one thing to lose, you know, had they beaten South Florida, had they lost LSU, that's one thing. You still, I think, could have some goodwill in the program. But to be at this point after a loss to South Florida with this schedule coming up, it feels like it's going to be harder than last year to overcome. Of course, you know, we said that last year and they went on that run. So I'm hesitant to make a prediction about where this goes. But you did mention about the offense and kind of the drives, like, at, you know, in the start of the game and into the game. I mean, you know, kicking too many field goals is also a problem. Like, you got to be able to punch the ball in the end zone and not kick 3 field goals and set yourself up in a close game like that with a very capable South Florida team.
Right. Well, hey, real quick, Steven, did you see old Sarkisian today asked about Arch injury? And he, for some reason, said, well, I don't have a camera on you guys when you go to the bathroom.
It's strange.
Well, I bring that up because Florida and Sarkisian, they've got some weird issues on their mind. But hey, I think they're just doing the Lord's work over here for us, Steven, because shout out our new sponsor, Tushy Bidets. Go check them out. Shout out Sark, who wants to put a camera in your bathroom. But if you do, you can keep your rear looking pretty good for old Sark and Sark's camera. Go check them out. HelloTushy.com. Promo code THATSEC. Get you 10% off. Steven, they sent Shane and I these Tushy devices. Man, I'll tell you, I'm having a joy in there. So much that I will be happy if Sark wants to put a camera in his bathroom, because he'll see the happiest man in podcasting. So go check them out. HelloTushy.com. Promo code THATSEC to get 10% off. Billy, we might send these to Billy because he's got to clean his shit up down there, and we'll send them to Sark to get him all figured out down there at Tushy. You know what?
I also saw Hugh Freeze talk about straining this week too. Maybe he needs.
That's a bridge too far, Steven. This is a serious show now. Come on.
I think you're right though. I think there could be like a Tushy move of the week to clean up your act, and it definitely goes to Florida after that loss.
Right. So don't forget, HelloTushy.com, promo code THATSEC, 10% off. Steven, who's next on the panic meter here?
Let's talk about South Carolina. I'm going to raise the panic meter to 6 on the offense. Now, maybe that might seem high, but I'm looking at this schedule coming up. Vanderbilt, which looks a lot better from last year to this year. Also, Missouri, that road game on September 20th coming up, with the way Missouri just beat Kansas. You also just look at the production for the offense so far for South Carolina. I think, what, 4 offensive touchdowns, and they scored 2 of those against South Carolina State on Saturday. You know, 3.5 yards per carry. The game was choppy because of the weather. Hard to read too much into it because of the timing. But we now have 2 games of data here in 2025. And I would have liked to have seen the offensive line and the rushing attack be able to take a little bit more authority against a overmatched opponent. So after two games, haven't really seen the offense maybe I was hoping to see out of South Carolina, but it's also we're coming up on the third game of the season SEC play. There's still a lot of room to improve and also a lot of things they could show us this week that sort of make that panic meter go away.
Yeah. And Steven, you and I were talking off air right before we launched the show, but you know, this is technically Mike Shula as offensive coordinator. We've got three games of data now going back to the bowl game against Illinois. And maybe that's not fair because bowl games are weird and everything like that. But three games, and each time it's kind of unique that they have scored 17 offensive points, you know, so we're not counting special teams because he shouldn't get credit for stuff like that. But again, he's got Lenore Sellers, who, I mean, I know he's got some haters out there. I don't know what those people are thinking, but unless you're just some hater, clearly you can see this kid's talented and extremely talented. But he's not playing up to that level. So, again, that goes against Mike Shula. How much do you think Mike Shula is to blame? How much do you think maybe it's more the players or failing to execute it? And quite frankly, maybe Dow Loggins was a lot more important to this operation than I was willing to give him credit for.
It's a good question. I mean, 5.2 yards per play so far through the first 2 weeks of the season, one of the lower-rated offenses in the SEC. I think the answer to your question is probably more of a, we just don't have enough data yet because of the opponents in the schedule. And that's kind of like a theme, I think, with this season is like, we have all this off season, we get to week one, we have some high profile matchups. The schedule's a little weird. We get to week two, there's all these FCS, you know, power conference games. Then you get to that third week and you get a better data point. Maybe the best way to look at this is we came into the season with question marks about how could they run the ball, the offensive line, and also consistency at receiver. And I like their running backs from a talent standpoint, but I'm leaving those first two games still saying, I think those questions that I still had about those groups are still there. I don't necessarily feel any better about the potential production right now through the first two games.
Yeah, and perhaps a silver lining. I don't know how much longer this will be an excuse. Maybe it'll just be his whole tenure, but they always start out slow in Columbia under Shane Beamer. I have no idea why. And it's obviously a different cast of characters every time. And they damn near always heat up. So if I'm a Gamecock fan, I'm not hitting the panic button. I know you're not either, Steven. You're monitoring the situation. And I think that's fair. I think the true test obviously will come this weekend and more to come. But Vanderbilt should be significantly their toughest game to date. So that's going to tell us a lot.
Yeah, I think if South Carolina's offense kind of wakes up this week and has a complete performance, I will feel a lot better going forward. And to your point, you know, it's still early in the season. Like, these teams are going to get a lot better. We see teams get a lot better from week one to week two. And then we see once we get into conference play, and with all of the new pieces that South Carolina has and some of the younger players trying to work in, I'm not surprised there is some sort of transition period. You add in a new coordinator. It's not surprising that it's been that way. And then you add in the choppy start to the schedule. I could see why this group started slow, but I think this week it's got to get going a lot faster against Vanderbilt.
Yeah. And shout out Chase Millam here, cousin Chase. Am I crazy to have some reasonable confidence in Vanderbilt to beat South Carolina based on their performance versus common opponents? Do you put any stock into that, Steven? I know sometimes that plays a factor, but oftentimes it doesn't. But it is unique because there's only been two games played and they've each played them. So I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
I think I do put some stock into it, but also, you know, from a, like, there's, they played Virginia Tech. They're playing each other. There's matchups within that game for Vanderbilt and South Carolina that are going to be different than the ones that we saw. Also, I think, would venture to guess, South Carolina's spread against Virginia Tech would have been a little bit larger had the game been in Williams-Brice as opposed to Atlanta. Also, interesting, the spread is 5.5. I mean, I think Vanderbilt's getting a lot of early respect as just the line opened up. So I would probably give Vanderbilt more confidence than I had 3-4 weeks ago to win this game, and certainly like back to the offseason before we saw anything here. But the series has been controlled by South Carolina. It'll be interesting to see what happens this week.
Mm-hmm. All right, so who's next on Stephen's panic meter?
I'm going to talk about a team that there might be some panic about. I'm not panicked. Talk about LSU. We're just going to raise the panic meter from 1 to 2, sort of like a threat assessment here as LSU moves into the game against Florida. I think last week against Louisiana Tech, we talk about timing with South Carolina playing the game on Sunday. LSU played a game against Clemson on the road late Saturday night. They had to turn around, get ready to play Louisiana Tech, opponent that wasn't going to threaten them. And they kind of went through the motions and still won by 16 points. So I am not concerned at all about LSU as we go into week 3 against Florida. I think we will see a much better LSU effort on Saturday against Florida. Also, I think maybe the biggest concern for me leaving that game was the injuries, like seeing Braylon Moore, Tre'Dez Green getting hurt. It could either one of those carry over into this game against Florida. So a little bit of concern about the sluggish nature, but I'm not too concerned in the big picture here.
Yeah, I wanted to highlight this comment from Gamers Life, who says LSU should be panicked after Clemson also struggled. I guess you could take it that way, but doesn't that kind of just give us further evidence to exactly what you pointed to, Stephen, where Clemson's in the same boat? I know they lost the game, but they put in so much stock. That was the game of the week. That was the night game. And then they turn around and it's like, I don't know. It's a hangover is what it is. Yeah. So that's how I would read that. Now I would love it if Clemson went like 2-10 this year, but I just don't think that's going to happen despite what we saw against Troy. I think here's the case. And I've been saying this on every show. I think, Steve, people are probably so tired of me hearing this. I think this is where we're at now with college football. Now, I think teams will emerge. Maybe by the end of the year, this won't be an issue. But we're seeing up and down, up and down, up and down. I just think it's incredibly difficult to keep these guys locked in for whatever reason. I don't know if it's NIL, transfer portal, player movement. I don't know. But I would certainly imagine that's a piece of it, to where one week Alabama looks, I know the competition is different, but they looked awful against Florida State. They look like the best team in the country against ULM. We've seen Georgia play twice now. Marshall, they looked solid against Austin Peay. Stephen, they didn't look as good. You know, I mean, it's up and down. It's up and down. And I think that's the state of college football right now. I really do.
I agree with you. I think the volatile nature of college football is even more volatile than before because of things like the transfer portal. Rosters are so fluid. Like, some of these teams didn't have everybody in for the spring with freshmen. Transfers arrived in the summer. They're still getting acclimated. It may take a few games for this to get sorted out. Then you add in the schedules. You add in the weird week ones with the timing of it. That's why I'm not so concerned yet about like LSU's performance. Also on Clemson too, I think that's another situation where you kind of had like some weird weather and the game was kind of slowed, and then you kind of start stop. Stuff like that makes me think like those are kind of outlier performances. Although I do wonder like what Gray Dabo would give his team after what he said about LSU in week one. But I think the way I kind of look at the season so far is those are two data points. This week in week 3 will tell us a lot more. Like, what's closer to the truth? Is it week 1 or week 2? And that's kind of what I'm excited to see about LSU, and then also to see Clemson because they play a good Georgia Tech team this week too.
And Cousin Brandon says, it's the day of my phone and the Snapchat, Mike, which I didn't know Snapchat was still a thing, but I guess that
TikTok
is official.
Maybe?
I'm getting old, but yeah. All right, who's next on the panic meter, Steven?
We talked about him as one of the biggest wins, but I just want to flag something that I'm a little bit concerned about, and that is Oklahoma. I'm going to raise my panic meter to 4. Now, we have 2 games of data on Oklahoma. We also have Oklahoma playing a really good defense in Michigan. They also just shuffled the offensive line. So all those things are notable. But I am a little bit worried if I'm Oklahoma about how this offensive line grows from here. Can you get more out of the pieces around John Mateer? And by that, I mean, does the offensive line get better? Can you hold up a little bit better in pass protection? That opens up some things. In the ground game, you know, they just played a great Michigan defense. But now, 2 games into the season, they're averaging just 3.4 yards per carry. And the Illinois State game, they only had 103 rushing yards. I'm not 100% panicked here because you could get the starting five figured out. The line grows over the next couple weeks. But Mateer, as a quarterback, probably can't handle 20 carries a week in the SEC. You got to have some help around him. And that's what I'm wondering going forward is, can the rest of the pieces take some of the pressure off Mateer so that you're not relying on him to handle 15 to 20 carries every week, plus what he's doing through the air?
Mm-hmm. And to your point, Stephen, Auburn, I mean, just the whole friggin' SEC schedule, but Auburn, I know it's Ball State, but they surrendered like 60 yards. You know, they're good on defense. Texas, if Oklahoma's not the best defense in the SEC, Texas probably is. I mean, they may be 1-2. South Carolina, we just questioned their offense. Their defense looks like $1 million. Ole Miss, Pete Golding, they've got it rolling. Tennessee, I mean, they're freaking good on defense. Alabama remains to be seen, but they're talented. Yeah. And basically, Missouri, they're uber talented. And LSU looks like $1 million on defense. So just the point being, you're not going to beat a lot of these teams being one-dimensional. You're just not. Now, do you have to run for 200 yards? No. But that Oklahoma we got on that final drive, Stephen, where they're balanced and they were able to run the ball, but it was, I literally just got done watching that. So it was a drive that won them the game. It was impressive. But even that, it was like every drive, every third down was like 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3. And it's like, they'd get it by like a yard. You know what I mean? Yeah. And again, they got it. So we don't take, we're not picking against them, but it's can you do 9 of those in a row against all those SEC defenses I just listed? I think not. I really don't.
I think from after seeing the first couple weeks of the season, like Auburn, like to your point, Auburn, Texas, you know, we'll see about some of those other ones, but Auburn, Texas, and LSU look like better defenses, maybe than Michigan. Auburn, Michigan, maybe a little bit close, but I think the good news here for Oklahoma is that it can get better. Like given the ingredients, they don't feel stuck, like given the running back talent. Also Ben Arbuckle's done a great job through the first couple weeks of the season. What a home run hire we thought it was. And it's worked out. I worry about Mateer has a lot of pressure on him. You've got to keep him healthy in SEC play in order to get to that playoff level. So I think just about finding some ways to take that off of him so that way when the 5 to 10 runs come up that you need him to make a difference on, he can, and you're getting some consistent push so that you can close out that game like Oklahoma did against Michigan on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anyone else on the panic meter, Steven?
I know Mark Stoops is motivated, but I'm putting my panic meter at a 9 for Kentucky. Since 2016, yardage isn't everything when it comes to stats, but Kentucky has not finished higher than 10th in the SEC in passing yards per game since 2016. So they have been at the very bottom of the SEC in passing offense per game, basically almost for the last 10 years. Lot of uncertainty already 2 games into the season. I think you like what you've seen out of the running backs. You know, Seth McGowan, has had some great moments the first 2 weeks of the season. The passing game, though, whether it's the quarterback, whether it's the receivers or the scheme, it has been a struggle. And now maybe there's a quarterback switch coming up. The schedule's only going to get harder from here, playing at South Carolina, Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, Auburn. 2 games into the season, you don't want to be having these kind of questionable moments of whether you've picked the right quarterback, what exactly is going on schematically. So I am very concerned about where Kentucky goes from here. Compare Kentucky and Mississippi State. There is a completely different level of kind of like offensive performance optimism when both of these teams were kind of picked at the bottom of the league coming into the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, what the plan was, this offseason at Kentucky, Stephen, they invested heavily in the line of scrimmage. They let some receivers walk out the door, some good receivers, which I'm fine with, those guys weren't doing much for Kentucky anyway, but to go into a game like Ole Miss and have more pass attempts than rushing when rushing was seemingly working, that's head scratching. I still don't understand, what were they down a touchdown with, was it like 7 minutes left? They're going for it on like fourth and seven, fourth and eight, while they're easily in field goal range. I mean, just none of that made sense,
I had trouble getting the plays in, it seemed like, at times too. It looked like Calzada was pretty frustrated at one point in the first half. So the whole operation just seems, and I know Stoops kind of talked at after the game, they kind of cleaned some of that up from personnel getting the play in. But I guess when I think about Kentucky right now, unless Cutter is just way better than what we saw last year, they just feel like they have what they have and they feel kind of stuck offensively. And I don't know how much better it can get, especially when you look at the upcoming schedule for Kentucky. There weren't many guaranteed wins on the schedule coming into the year. You're playing South Carolina, Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, Auburn, Florida. Those are all ranked. Louisville or Vanderbilt could also be ranked later this season.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anyone else on the panic meter there, Stephen?
I think, Mike, we have sufficiently panicked everybody in the conference for this week.
So, well, if I may, I wanted to throw a little wild card at you here.
All right.
Any panic at all with Alabama? Again, you're like, what? How could there be panic? We just won 73-0. They literally look like $1 million. They scored on every possession. And I think it was 10 or 11 possessions, and one of them was a field goal. The rest were touchdowns. So, yes, they looked elite. But here's where I'm a little concerned, Stephen. It's the same as last year, where 1 week we look fantastic, 1 week we look awful. Now they've kind of reversed it, but just given the fact that it's so inconsistent, that to me is the thing that's plaguing Kalen DeBoer. And does that bother you at all? That, again, I know it's just year two, game two, but does it bother you at all that we just look so out of sorts, and then we look like $1 million? Like, I'm afraid that's maybe what we're getting out of Kalen DeBoer at this point.
I think that's fair. I mean, isn't that kind of? I mean, we have. I mean, 14 or 15 games of data now on Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. And it's, the trend seems to be that they got up for the Georgia game last season. And then, of course, there was Vanderbilt. There was Oklahoma. They didn't play well in the bowl game. And then they didn't, obviously, they lost to Florida State. Like, there's an inconsistent pattern that's showing up. Like, once, you can understand that. The fact that it's happened multiple times kind of seems to be where this team is. So I am concerned. And I think the next couple weeks are going to be hard because they get Wisconsin, then they get Georgia. Like, I think after the Georgia game, it's got to be pedal to the metal, because if you lose to Georgia, you've got two losses. You're going to have to try and run the table, and it's going to require a team that needs to be way more consistent than we saw last year and this year. So, yes, I am concerned.
And then one final potential panic. Again, we kind of already hit on this, but Austin Simmons making some mistakes. He's still a young player. He's only 19. You're gonna get ready to hear that all damn year. Which, again, a week ago, Steven, I thought he looked like $1 million. Again, I'm kind of repeating myself now. But, if they get into a shootout, if it's a Taylen Green versus Austin Simmons shootout, give me Taylen Green. I know Ole Miss got a better roster, better defense. They should win this game. But it may literally come down to, last possession, who's got the ball. Are you at all panicked that after just 2 weeks, and it was on the road, there's a lot of excuses we can make here, but any panic at all that our quarterback's looking a little shaky going into another conference game here?
I'm not too concerned. Young quarterback, road start, an offense that's going to put the ball up enough. I could see some early mistakes here. I think the one thing that is pretty clear so far, the first two games, and we saw this in limited time last year, Austin Simmons is ultra talented. And so I think you're going to live with those mistakes, because they're probably not going to happen later this year or even into next year. So I think not concerned in the big picture, but I think if you talk about, like, games that are decided in the margins, then I do get concerned, because if you turn the ball over, it's a possession and it gets harder to kind of keep pace. So, I probably wouldn't put a very high level of panic on it, but my concern level about the interceptions the last 2 weeks is certainly raised a bit.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, hey, we could just go right to that game, but we've not at all really discussed Georgia and Tennessee, because they were playing cream puff. Sorry, Steven. I know that's your alma mater, Boston P, over here. But let's dive into that matchup where Georgia's dominated it. But, pretty interesting. I don't know if you've seen this, Steven, but the betting odds down to 3.5. Some people said 2.5 earlier. I think it opened around 7. So the money's coming in on Tennessee at home, college game day, huge game. Tennessee looks better than expected. Georgia, I think, looks a little not as good as expected. I don't even know if that's the proper way to say that. But again, what's your early read on Georgia at Tennessee?
Mike, I think the thing, and this is kind of boring, is I think simply we are going to learn a lot about both these teams. Because if you look at how the season has played out, Tennessee has looked great against the opponents. Strength needs to be noted is basically what I'm getting at. Like Syracuse, I think, is probably nowhere near last year's 10 victories. East Tennessee State is an FCS team. Georgia hasn't looked quite as impressive. The game against Austin Peay, of course, there was the delay. I don't know how much. I think that probably impacted some things, but they have not looked as impressive as Tennessee has. So what does that kind of mean? Like, is Georgia holding back something? How do you weigh the performances for Tennessee against favorable competition? Those are kind of things that are going on in my mind. And so kind of in the background, I'm looking at the series history and I'm thinking, like, Kirby's got something up his sleeve this week, right? But then I say, man, Georgia's going to have to block better. They're going to have to block better. They're going to have to get the running game going. And if they can't, like, can Gunnar Stockton be able to execute on passing downs is still going to be a real question here, because we have not seen Georgia against an opponent where they've needed to do this. So there's a lot of intrigue and just a lot of mystery for these two teams.
Yeah, and I posed this question earlier to Chris Marler on our afternoon show, but let me maybe amend it a little bit. The way I posed it to him was, could you see a scenario where Tennessee loses this game and faces Georgia again in the SEC championship? But let me amend that to also, I mean, heck, maybe it splits the other way too, where Georgia is currently, I think it's fair to say, they might be a little bit of a work in progress, particularly on offense with Gunner. Could you see Georgia perhaps getting beat on the road by a slim margin and then bouncing back? I've meant it mostly for Tennessee, just because we kind of already had this as a three-game schedule with Georgia, Alabama, and Florida. And Alabama's obviously had their moments of being down. Florida, clearly. Maybe we sub Oklahoma in there as the second most challenging game. But could you see a scenario where the loser of this game still makes the SEC championship, Georgia, Tennessee?
I think that's fair. Let me ask you this. Has Shane started to feel like 98 yet?
He always feels like 98. Okay. In the middle of the Butch Jones Pruitt era, he thought it was 98, you know?
Fair point. I one thing that stands out to me on look at that schedule for Tennessee is it does feel like it's opened up a little bit for him.
Right.
Because who knows what Florida's going to look like by November. If they play like they did on Saturday, Billy Napier is not going to be the coach, and I think you kind of question what the motivation is for Florida late in the year. Alabama? Well, go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off, Steve, but listen to what you just said. And yeah, this is pretty much the point I'm trying to make. This was already on paper perhaps the easiest schedule in the conference, and after 2 weeks, it looks easier. So that's why I'm saying even if Tennessee loses, which, hell, I mean, they have an outstanding chance of losing, considering they can't beat Georgia, but also because they're so banged up at critical positions, that I don't think it's the end of the world. Where every other year you lose to Georgia, you're like, we're just fighting for second in the East or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think Tennessee's schedule looks more favorable to me than it did a couple weeks ago, given what's happened with Alabama and what's happened with Florida. maybe this might not be fair, but it almost feels like they're maybe one of the biggest early winners in terms of scheduling. They already had the favorable schedule coming in, and we've seen what Alabama and Florida could be. So now you're getting Georgia at your place when Georgia's probably vulnerable. That's probably about as favorable as a draw as you could have asked for in a year where there had all this chaos in the offseason and turnover. So I think the schedule is breaking in Tennessee's way. And also, Georgia does feel like a work in progress to me. I think if you're Georgia, like, let's just say you lose this game, I think you want to get Georgia early, because I think by November, October, November, this is going to be a much different team.
Yeah, hey, you just hit on it's exactly what I wanted to kind of ask you too, Steven. So again, Georgia has beaten Tennessee 8 in a row. Heck, they've beaten everybody about 8 in a row, short of Ole Miss and Bama. But critical, perhaps, in that 8-game winning streak is Georgia has their identity always by that point in time. Georgia does not have its identity, particularly on offense, heading into week 3. Now, they may find it on Saturday, but that's a big edge, I think, to Tennessee in the fact that Georgia's kind of still working itself out. What's your thoughts on that statement?
I think that's fair. And I think if I'm Tennessee, I want to, much like we saw a couple years ago with Tennessee, Alabama, like, get ahead, keep the crowd in it, and force Georgia to play from behind. I think if this is like a sort of like a meat grinder where it's like Georgia's up 13-3 and they can play the defense and they can run the ball, that's going to play heavily into Georgia's strengths here. So I think on the identity front for Georgia, to me, it's like this game's got to be won by the defense. And I don't think they'll – maybe they will, but I think it'll be a lot of like, let's lean on the defense, play some field position, run the ball, get the ball quick to branch on the screens. Don't ask Stockton to be winning on 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7 all afternoon.
And then, again, I know it's early, but given what we've seen after 2 weeks, who would you give the edge at quarterback between Gunnar Stockton and Joey Aguilar?
I think you'd have to go Joey Aguilar, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, he ain't playing ETSU. But
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's why I asked that, because never in a million years did I think that would be the case, and I think it's kind of clear. Now, again, Gunnar – I like Gunner's weapons better, but he has not put it all together yet. But he could very well do it on Saturday. I'm not discounting him, but I would give the edge to Aguilar.
I think just if you had to grade performances, I think Aguilar has been better. I think this is a boring answer, but we don't know a lot about Stockton yet. Like, I think he held up well last year against Notre Dame and Texas when he was called into the game. But like, what's the next like evolution of this offense? Because it's been clear, line of scrimmage, run the ball, that's a priority. There's things you can do off of that. Like, maybe Stockton doesn't need to throw for 300 yards to win this game. I think what would worry me if I'm Tennessee is some of the YOLO ball that Aguilar can play. We saw that throw. Like, he's like, thank goodness like Mike Matthews is down there to catch it for Tennessee. But you can't do that against Georgia. So I think Georgia's defensive line and secondary are going to present some different challenges. I think Aguilar will almost have to be a main character. I think Stockton can be like a secondary piece in this, if Georgia wins.
Yeah. And then last thing I've got for you on this matchup, Steven, do you buy into the fact that Georgia maybe has been vanilla, you know, holding back, whatever you want to call it, knowing that they could easily beat Austin Peay and they tore Marshall up? That maybe they were kind of holding it back for this trip. And of course, Alabama's coming up here in a couple of weeks. So maybe they've been kind of playing it close to the vest.
I think so. I think they have to be. I mean, you could also look at it another way and say, shouldn't they have tried to do a little bit more, but maybe the weather against Austin Peay kind of changed things. You would like to have some live work before you get into the heart of conference play. But I think there's more there to come for Georgia's offense. I don't think we're seeing the final product. So I would take the idea they've probably been holding back a bit.
Shout out Jeez Louise. He says Steven's jealous that Joey's better than Arch.
He has been so far.
All right. Hey, how about this one, Steven, where, I mean, we got a lot of good conference games, but let's go at a conference for A&M at Notre Dame. what a matchup for A&M. This could be a launching point. And we did have a donation. I want to give him a shout out here. Shout out to Nathan, cousin Nathan Giggum, number 12, ranked quarterback in the SEC, going to lead Aggies to victory at Notre Dame. What's your thoughts, early read on this game, Stephen? A&M hitting the road for Notre Dame.
Mike, I think the same thing you can say about Tennessee also works for Texas A&M, in the sense that you probably feel a lot better about your marquee test and your chances to win them because of what you've seen through the first couple weeks. There are some things that A&M certainly needs to work on, but I think they've been doing that. Like, I think they've been kind of tinkering and messing around with UTSA and Utah State. I think we'll see a better final product on the field this week. And so this game looks winnable based upon the way that Texas A&M has played, but also the way that Notre Dame played in the season opener against Miami. They had an off week last week, so they're well rested. They've had a chance to fix things. They did not run the ball as well as we thought coming into that game. Their offensive line also got pushed around by Miami. If I'm Cassius Howe, I'm sitting there saying, man, I have all these sacks against Utah State. Can I get a couple more against Notre Dame, given what happened against Miami a few weeks ago? But I think the bottom line here is, I think you feel better if you're Texas A&M, given what you saw from Notre Dame, plus with the way Marcel Reed has been playing through the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, and what's the Notre Dame's quarterback's name? Is it C.J. Carr?
Yeah.
Just his second game, I believe, is the starting quarterback. Now, he looked pretty good, I thought, against Miami, or good for a first game, I guess I should say. It was peculiar. I watched that game pretty intently. I think that was, what was that, a Sunday or Monday night or something?
Sunday night. Yeah.
They went away from their running back, who's supposed to be all world. And A&M's had some issues with UTSA running back, went up and down the field on them. Could the game simply be, you know, that simple to where if they could corral him, that A&M could win this one?
I think that's a key to the game for me, is like for all of the CJ Carr second start, what Marcel Reed is, I think if you're Texas A&M, like, look at the way that Miami defended Notre Dame. They shut down Jeremiah Love. Now, I think Notre Dame could have done a better job of getting him more involved in the game as opposed to just having, you know, a handful of carries. So I suspect that Notre Dame's going to, they've had to hear for 2 weeks Jeremiah Love wasn't involved enough. They're seeing A&M's defense. They're probably going, this is going to be a Jeremiah Love kind of game. But Miami was able to take away the run, and they forced CJ Carr to win. And Notre Dame's receivers are a lot better than they were last year, so they have guys who can win one-on-one. But it also works on the Texas A&M side of things. I mean, Miami was able to get a little bit of a push, and their offensive line is good at this Notre Dame front, which is also good. So I think if you're A&M, you're going saying, we might be able to run the ball. And if we can slow down Jeremiah Love and force a quarterback in a second start to win, we can repay that Notre Dame win last year in College Station with an Aggies win in South Bend this time around.
Mm-hmm. And that was such a critical game, Stephen. That was the first game, Mike Elko, I believe. It was College Game Day, if I'm not mistaken. And it was just kind of like, A&M, you know, same old A&M. And I don't think they ever got that respect until maybe beating LSU. What a game that was. But, you know, it was just kind of, you know, it didn't define the season, but it certainly seemed to define the narrative over what A&M could be. I think it could work in the reverse order. If A&M gets a big win, Notre Dame's got all this respect. And I'm not, you know, I think some of it was warranted. They proved a lot of people wrong. And I do think their coach is a heck of a coach, Marcus Freeman. So I think this would be a major, major win, and arguably the best win of the Mike Elko era to date, if they could get it. Could you see this? Here's another question that we were kind of debating with Marler. What if A&M gets this one? What's your confidence? Because mine would be fairly high that they could finish as high as maybe 10-2 if we knew they were getting the win at Notre Dame. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would put Texas A&M probably in the playoff if they beat Notre Dame. I think what you're getting at gets at something that I've thought about, and it's like, the outside right now thinks that Texas A&M is just going to finish 8-5 like forever.
Right.
But there's sometimes when the program arrives and you don't know it until they win the game. And that might be what happens on Saturday. You know, all of what Elko, we talked about it, like with the coach scouting, the opposing coaches this offseason saying what you're seeing, you know, in front and also what's behind the curtain and all the stuff that they're doing, this program is moving forward. If they go on the road and beat Notre Dame, that schedule looks doable to me. Also, Notre Dame would be 0-2 at that point. They're going to have a hard time getting back in the playoff because of what they have on their schedule. So you start to think, okay, you're starting to knock out some contenders here. So a team like a Texas A&M at 10-2, maybe an Oklahoma at 10-2, their path gets better to the college football playoff. So I think it's a chance to kind of go on the road and get some program validation for Mike Elko. And then also you think about the bigger stakes that are there too.
And maybe Arkansas can eliminate Notre Dame completely with a third loss from the playoff consideration. But hey, last thing I got on this game, again, I watched that Miami game pretty intently. To my knowledge, Miami had like a complete retooled receiving core, as kind of A&M does as well. But point being, Miami kind of had a lot of success with that. A&M with Casey Concepcion, Mario Craver. I mean, both those guys look like $1 million. Terry Bussey had a big touchdown in the last game against Utah State. Marcel Reed playing better and better. The best football I think I've ever seen him play. With the running game we've referenced, we know what they got at running back and back on the offensive line. Who do you think is at an advantage in this football game, just from my ignorance of Notre Dame's defense? Notre Dame defense, A&M offense, what are the advantages there for in that matchup?
I think if you're wanting to take the Notre Dame side of this, you would point to Leonard Moore, who's one of the best corners in college football, and say, we're going to put him on Concepcion or Craver or whoever, and it's going to take away one weapon. Notre Dame's defense is good. They're probably not as good as last year. They've changed coordinators. Al Golden's in the NFL. Chris Ash is their new coordinator. They have some turnover on the defensive line and a few pieces in the secondary, but this is still a good group. But I think, you know, Miami with Carson Beck and some new receivers found ways to move the ball. And now you're taking Marcel Reed's mobility. You're taking, I mean, talk about improvement, like getting Bussey, Concepcion, and Craver is a much better trio of receivers from a game-breaking standpoint than what A&M had last season. So I guess maybe like the strengths here is like veteran offensive line matches up well against Notre Dame's front. And then I think your playmaking ability of those receivers matches up well against a good secondary here for Notre Dame. It's like strength on strength, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, let's move back into the conference play, Stephen, for Florida. Remember them? Are they still in the conference or have they been relegated to the Sun Belt? I don't know. At LSU, Stephen, where, again, a week ago I thought, man, this is a game. This is a game of the week here. Now it's going to be a complete afterthought thanks to Billy and the boys here. But, again, this is a heated rivalry. I know these two, for some reason, don't like the rivalry. Who knows? It may be coming to an end here annually, but we got it for now, Stephen. And again, this just goes back and back. But if we could just keep it with these two tenures, I just love the fact that old Billy Napier wanted this job. He was doing well at Louisiana, and you know LSU was open. They didn't even give him a sniff. And then last year, finally, Florida turned the tide. Now they got to go to Baton Rouge, and wouldn't you know it, man? I just got a sneaky feeling, Stephen, and again, I'm wrong about 95% of the time, so LSU's probably going to win by 50. But I got a sneaky feeling, Stephen, this is going to be the best Florida that we see this season, and they're at least going to take it down to the wire. What's your read on Florida at LSU?
That would be the most college football thing in 2025, wouldn't it? Like, it doesn't seem like it's out of the realm of possibility that Florida just plays unbelievably great on Saturday. I do think if you're LSU, you probably have a sense of revenge, too, because of, like you said, what happened last year in the Swamp. You know, I could see, like, this LSU team seems pretty hungry. You know, they ended the losing streak in season openers. They took care of business in Clemson. Now they're getting Florida at their place with a chance to get revenge there. So, I mean, this LSU team, to use a bad Mark Stoops thing, like they seem motivated to take this thing pretty far this year. I think the question for Florida is, you know, everything we saw the first two games, this offensive line is going up against a much improved LSU front. Can they get some traction for Jaden Baugh? Do we see DJ Lagway knock off some of the rust? And then this Florida defense is going to have to contain these LSU receivers and Garrett Nussmeier. We saw last week against Louisiana Tech, Barry and Brown was great. Nick Anderson caught a touchdown. Like, the full arsenal has been on display. So I think potentially a great quarterback battle between Lagway and Nussmeier. There's revenge. There's a hungry Florida team, we think. There's a lot of intrigue for me in this one.
Yeah, and I didn't realize, you know, how contested it. The series is tied at 34-34, which is pretty wild. And the over-under seems very high, given that LSU has been struggling to score. Florida certainly struggling to score. 54.5. I would lean under on that one personally, because both these defenses are playing fairly well. I know Florida just lost to South Florida, but it wasn't on their defense necessarily. So, yeah, I mean, this is going to be quite the matchup. They're going to need DJ Lagway to play a heck of a lot better than he has been, but I think he's got that in him. Yeah, this is a huge game. You know, again, Florida has been in this position where they had to play their coach off the hot seat, and boy, did they do it. Meanwhile, LSU, man, Brian Kelly, it was after Clemson, you know, he's calling out Dabo. He had a little fiery bit, calling out the media after this Louisiana Tech. I caught him on Feinbaum talking about what a dominant performance it was against Louisiana Tech. Like, he seems to be trying to talk himself into doing a good job, which, heck, they're 2-0, so he's doing a good job. But, yeah, I just thought that was comical. But nobody cares if you lose this one, you know what?
Yeah, Brian Kelly's feeling it right now, right? Like, he's like the, you know, the 3-point shooter pulling it up from halftime, from the, you know, the half court, and just, yeah, why not chucking it up there? I'm feeling good. I mean, he's got good reason to be. I mean, the defense shut down Clemson in week one. I know Clemson struggled in week two. I'm not totally sold that that's the Clemson team we're going to see going forward. But you got Nussmeier and these weapons. But also, it's like, it's sort of that revenge tour, and not to use a bad like Alabama thing here, but, you know, if you get Florida at your place, you've been saying all offseason this is a tough schedule, you took care of business against Clemson, now you get Florida in there. I mean, LSU's got a really compelling case to after seeing, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, and all these teams, they've got a case to be right there if they can take care of business in this game against Florida, continue to be ranked in the top five.
What would be a key, you think, not that you're predicting the game right now, but what would be a key in your mind for Florida to pull off the upset here?
I want to see a few big plays from DJ Lagway. I don't think you can just sit and try to screen your way or, you know, put like 11 plays on the board. I think there's got to be some flash here. So I would want to see a couple big plays from Lagway. You know, also, Mike, I also think like LSU's offensive line acquitted itself well against Clemson, but what if Braylon Moore can't play at center? Can you get a couple of sacks and put Nussmeier in some bad positions? So that those kind of be the two things that maybe I'm looking for probably the most out of Florida.
Mm-hmm. And I just looked it up because I was like, well, maybe this is a Jaden Baugh day. LSU is currently number 7 in the country in run defense. So that's probably not going to be the case, but you know, certainly that would be a factor. Jaden Baugh's, I think he's their best offensive player at this point in time. So getting him going could be paramount to the upset there too, as well.
Yeah. I mean, both quarterbacks here too. Like, I think both quarterbacks can win like on passing downs, but if you can just kind of, even if it's not 200 yards, it's like LSU did against Clemson, do just enough so that you can stay out of 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9 all day, whether it's Durham or Baugh, like sneaky, like rushing advantage might be something to watch.
All right, how about this one, Steve? Cannot wait. We've hit on it a little bit here, but two of the best offenses in the conference in this young season, Arkansas travels to Ole Miss. These two, I know last year was a blowout, but, I mean, basically the entire rest of the Sam Pittman, Lane Kiffin, who they got hired at the same time, these games have been fun, back and forth, high-flying. You can never quite tell what's going to happen. the way Arkansas is being so efficient on offense. I think this gives them a real, real shot. Meanwhile, Ole Miss, they got the number one rusher in the conference right now in Kewon Lacy. So they got a lot going on, too. This could be a really high-scoring game. Should be a fun one. What's your early thoughts on Arkansas at Ole Miss?
Yeah, I think fun, exciting, potentially high-scoring. I think all of those are in play here. You talk about the core. I mean, Taylen Green, all he does is, like, throw touchdowns to start this season. And the receivers that Arkansas brought in, like the transfers, those all look like hits. Like Omega Blake's been playing well. You throw in Rahan Jones, who caught the touchdown, for the tight end transfer. They've got some weapons. And so weapons plus Taylen Green, plus maybe an Ole Miss cornerback situation that we came into the season wondering about. Can you take advantage of it here? And then the other side of this is we saw Arkansas's defense kind of struggle early on in the opener. They've played better since then. Arkansas State, of course, had the kickoff return, but for the most part, I thought Arkansas defensively played a lot better. So I think you've got some firepower there with Simmons and Taylen Green, great skill talent. Also, maybe a little bit of extra motivation for Arkansas here, given the sort of the transfer path from Oxford to or from Fayetteville to Oxford the last couple of years. So getting Austin Simmons this early in his career, even though it's at in Oxford, is probably a good thing for Arkansas's chances of an upset here.
Right. Yeah. I didn't even remember that. Yeah. I kind of completely overlooked, but yeah, that is an interesting angle to this one. No doubt. Bobby Petrino, Pete Golding. I mean, that's worth the price of admission alone. Those two going head to head. My biggest concern, though, would be Arkansas's defense in this matchup. I think, but far and away, that's probably the weakest unit of the four going head to head. They've got to do their part. And, you know, I think they got to keep this game in the 30s if Arkansas's got any shot to pull it off. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the defense for Arkansas has played better. I think the problem is the opponent. Like, you know, you play an FCS opponent and you play Arkansas State, the challenge is significantly tougher this week with Ole Miss. So I think this game could be high scoring. And if I'm, you know, even, I mean, this is the case too. Like, if I'm thinking about Ole Miss, we knew they came into the season with some question marks on a revamped defense. Kentucky's and Georgia State, two teams with quarterback and receive, you know, some quarterback questions and passing game questions. We don't really know a whole lot about it. So I think in the big picture, like, maybe it might be a timely stop or two that end up deciding this one. So if you're Arkansas, you can keep it in the 30s. Maybe you saw, you know, some timely pressure last week, like turnover, a little bit of pressure here and there could be. One stop could be all you need to win this one if both quarterbacks are on fire like we think.
Right, and I'll make a prediction now, Steven. You let me know if you would agree with this. If Austin Simmons throws two picks like he has in every game so far, I think Arkansas wins it. If he doesn't, I think Ole Miss could win and win comfortably. What's your thoughts on that?
I would agree with that. I have, of the four groups, like you said, I think Arkansas's defense is the one that I have the most concerns about. But I also think that I think Taylen Green's going to land his punches in this game. And I think Arkansas's offense will be able to move the ball some. But if you have to make a few timely stops, it's got to be on the I trust Ole Miss a little bit more at this point. And if you add turnovers in, if you see that from Austin Simmons, I think that only helps two or even three would help Arkansas pull off the upset.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, final conference game here, Steven. What a showdown this could be. Vanderbilt at South Carolina night game. And remember, Steven, old Diego, he said, hey, here's one game I've got circled on my calendar, and it's South Carolina. I don't know. They must have said something to him or beat up his brother or so. I don't know what happened, but Diego's got it out for the Gamecocks. And hey, Diego, he often delivers when he sets his mind to something like this. So thoughts on this matchup as Vanderbilt looks to get their first win over South Carolina since, I think, the 70s or something.
Here's a prediction, too. If what was kind of striking is, you know, watching this series, you realize it, then you sort of look at the series history. But in four of the last six meetings, Vanderbilt has scored seven or fewer points. make a prediction. I think they probably get more than seven on Saturday. I trust Pavia and this offense to be able to get at least two touchdowns here. But I think that this is the interesting thing about this is, you know, we talked about it earlier, the common opponent and what does it mean? Like Vanderbilt was, I think, far more impressive in the second half. South Carolina had their moments against Virginia Tech in that season opener. You just look at the series history, the fact that South Carolina has really controlled this recently. Like, what does all that mean for Saturday? I think what it means is we got two teams with great quarterbacks, and I think the two defenses in this game are kind of on the uptick here. South Carolina probably not getting enough like preseason love on the defensive side of the ball. Vanderbilt brought back a lot of guys. Looks like both these groups are going to be near the top of the SEC. So I am interested to see which quarterback, which offense can kind of string together the drives. Like, it's a night game at South Carolina. The environment's going to be crazy for Vanderbilt. But Pavia and that confidence, it's going to travel to Columbia, South Carolina. So for all of the difficult factors that favor South Carolina, I think Pavia and Vanderbilt's got a good shot to go in there and get a victory. Would love to see South Carolina's offense get on track. That would probably make me feel better about this team going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I was obviously exaggerating before. These two have played 34 times, and South Carolina's won 30 of them. And they've played annually since 1992. And Vanderbilt last, they won back-to-back, but it was 2007 and 2008. So that's the last time. So it has been a while. Does that mean anything for this one? No, not really. But I would say this, Stephen, and maybe I'm wrong, because they just proved this the exact opposite, that Vanderbilt got down by 10 on the road at Virginia Tech and whooped them. I just have a feeling if you get down double digits to South Carolina, I think it's more likely they steamroll you than it is you come back. Williams-Brice Stadium, Lenore Sellers. Point being, Vanderbilt better not get down multiple scores if they have any intention to remain competitive in this game, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think just in environment, I mean, Lane Stadium is a tough place to play, but I don't think, and I think a night game in Columbia with Lenore Sellers and that defense on the other side is going to be a lot harder to come back from. And then just, you know, kind of like the style of play here, you almost like, can you wonder if Vanderbilt can frustrate South Carolina enough, you know, like with the slow possessions, maybe you only give Lenore Sellers like three times to touch the ball in the first half and three, and you shorten it and defense for Vanderbilt forces a turnover and Pavia works his magic. Like, I could see that happening here. And so I think like getting South Carolina's offense on track is going to be paramount this week. And it's going to be fun to see two quarterbacks who can be creative against two good defenses.
All right, how about non-conference? We got a lot of non-conference games here, Stephen. Wisconsin at Alabama. I didn't see much of it. I believe Wisconsin was playing MTSU, and it, just from what I saw, I think the Wisconsin fans were booing their team. I don't know. I think they rallied and won big, but what could you tell us at all about Wisconsin, and how does Alabama match up against them?
Mike, I would say this is probably not your like father's like Wisconsin team, because you know they used to be like, you know, the top teams in the Big Ten. They've slipped a little bit the last couple of years. Their new head coach, he's been there for 2 years. Luke Fickell did a great job at Cincinnati, took over at Wisconsin. Been a bit of a struggle so far. One area to watch, or two areas: injuries at quarterback and the offensive line. Because one of the goals this offseason was they got rid of old SEC friend Phil Longo and they hired Jeff Grimes as their offensive coordinator in an effort to get back to playing like Badger ball, like Wisconsin run the ball and all that. They lost their starting left tackle before the season. Their starting center might be out on Saturday. They're down to potentially a backup quarterback who is very experienced. Danny O'Neill started last week. He started last year at San Diego State, but they may be down their starter and they're really shaky on the offensive line. Hard to know how good their defense is. I think Fickell and that defensive staff is pretty good. They've also played MTSU and they played Miami of Ohio, two offenses that aren't very good so far this year. So I'm not surprised Alabama is favored by 20 points in this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they were favored by two touchdowns right. against Florida. I'm just saying. But I think it's a different story here. But basically, what I took away from everything you just said, Stephen, Luke Fickell, again, did great job at Cincinnati. Got him to the playoff. Remember that? I think he might be back at Cincinnati before long based on what's been going on up there. You know what?
If Louisiana keeps losing, Billy's going to be back there too. So,
and again, I mean, Ty Simpson, I know the competition was not great, but he just went 17 for 17, slice and diced old ULM. Jeremy Bernard is really heating up. Ryan Williams didn't even play last week, and they won by dang near 80. So, yeah, I think Alabama should be able to find a lot of success against Wisconsin's defense.
How confident are you in Ty Simpson through two games?
I honestly, a lot more confident than I thought I'd be, and I kind of talked him up this offseason. So I think he has been as good as advertised. I certainly think of the issues that plague Alabama, I don't even think he's on the page one.
Yeah, I think that's where I fall to. I thought it was interesting. I think Ryan Grubbs said he didn't like coach him hard enough this offseason, and he kind of turned that up after the Florida State loss. And then, no surprise, maybe he had he had an outstanding game against Louisiana Monroe. Competition noted here. Louisiana Monroe is not very good. But I think on the list of problems, like you said, offensive line, being able to get a little bit more consistency out of the ground game are greater concerns for me moving forward than Ty Simpson is right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you where they don't have any problems right now, Stephen. That's at Auburn, where they just whooped up on Ball State. Are they going to do the same thing at old South Alabama, where they are nearly a 4-touchdown favorite this weekend at home?
Mike, I'll make a bold prediction here. South Alabama will do better on offense than Ball State will, okay? They are better on offense than Ball State. SEC legend, hope you catch my joke here, Major Applewhite. Oh, he's the head coach at South Alabama. They have some offensive firepower. They lost their starting quarterback, Gio Lopez, to the transfer portal to North Carolina. Their new quarterback, Bishop Davenport's pretty solid in Sun Belt play. They have some good skill talent. Here's where Auburn's going to make some money on Saturday. Tulane ran for 241 yards against the South Alabama defense last week. South Alabama came into the season with question marks on the defensive line of scrimmage. So we saw Auburn's rushing attack, the long touchdown runs last week, even without Damari Alston. I think they'll be just fine here. So South Alabama can move the ball better than Ball State. I think their defense is better than Ball State, but still a big question. I think Auburn's going to keep it rolling this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard for me to disagree with that assessment. I don't think that's going to be very competitive, but, hey, if Auburn marches to 3-0, that's a heck of a start. Last year, they were in position to do something similar. They went 2-2. So, that's progress right there. You know what?
Should we be concerned at all about Hugh's ability to win some of these games that they're favored in?
I mean, of course, but
I mean, Oklahoma's ahead next week, so
I'm laying all in the weeds, all the Hughes takes after 9 months of bashing the guy. So, hey, he's 2-0. I'm going to give him his props. Who else is 2-0, Stephen? That Missouri Tigers. Come on, with Louisiana Lafayette. I ain't calling him anything other than that. Coming to town. First time he's two I've ever faced. Can you tell us anything about Louisiana or you know, what you'll be looking for Missouri in this matchup?
Absolutely. Missouri should take care of business here. It's kind of the perfect opponent for the hangover from beating Kansas the week, from this week. So Louisiana was supposed to have an SEC transfer at quarterback, Walker Howard. He's been at Ole Miss. He's been at LSU. He's out indefinitely with an oblique injury. So they've had to change their offense quickly during the season. They had a terrible loss to Rice in the season opener. They won last week against an FCS team. They want to run the ball. This will be a good test for Missouri's rush defense. I just don't think Louisiana has the offensive firepower without their starting quarterback to hang in this game. They've also got some questions on defense. What I'm trying to tell you is Missouri should win this game and should win this game comfortably. It is the perfect game. After playing Kansas, all that emotion, you play in a team that's without a starting quarterback. That's a good deal for Missouri.
Is Louisiana Lafayette, is their coach on any kind of hot seat that you're aware of?
It is. So it's Michael DeSormo, who's actually a former player there, and they just won the division last season. So I don't think so, but if they bottom out.
I'm just saying, because I think Napier's could be back on the market, and he did well down there last time.
Louisiana Tech could be looking for a coach too. Sonny Cumbie doesn't deliver this year.
Oh, there he goes. Go back home, Billy. That's what I'm just saying. Hey, how about your boy? I'm surprised we haven't talked about him yet, except for Sark's wild comments. Arch Manning, the Arch Mannings, I think it's his name comes before Texas. Texas, UTEP. Any thoughts on this historic matchup?
Mike, Texas should continue to keep the offense rolling here. I was encouraged by some of the things I saw against San Jose State for the Texas offense. Would like to see this group continue to progress. I still think there's some things with Manning and the offense as a whole. Ryan Wingo needs to get going at some point this season. So this game, Sam Houston, great opportunities to continue to work out the bugs for this offense before Texas goes to Florida in a few weeks. Don't think UTEP is much of a threat here. UTEP's coach, Scotty Walden, in his second year, doing a good job. Here's the interesting thing, though. If you follow recruiting, their quarterback is Malachi Nelson, the former five-star from a few years ago, was at USC, went to Boise at UTEP. They're 1-1. They lost to Utah State in the season opener, if you want some comparison from the opponent Texas A&M just had. So Texas should be able to take care of business here.
So 2 5-stars in this matchup and the better one at UTEP. No, I'm just kidding.
Arch has got to play better to live up. Steven's not selling his stock, but he's a little worried at this point.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you where also they're worried, Steven, and that's in Old Lexington, because they got Old Eastern Michigan coming to town. Again, I don't think they're worried about that, but I think they should be worried about the direction of the program if they're not. What's your thoughts on this matchup and you know, is Kentucky poised to cruise into the bye week celebrating a big win over the Big E?
Mike, I have some good news for Kentucky fans. So Eastern Michigan is coming off a loss to Long Island.
Yeah. Long Island bounce back. Maybe Florida's better than we thought.
Yeah, that strength of schedule is just going up. So Eastern Michigan lost to Long Island. Yes, that Long Island team that Florida pounded in week one. That's a good thing for Kentucky. Like, they should be able to take out some offensive frustration in this game. And if nothing else, it's a good opportunity for that Kentucky offense, whether it's Boley or if Calzada ends up coming back. Give them a chance to work some things out before you get to the bye week and then get to that game against South Carolina.
We just got to hope Kentucky's motivated for this matchup. All right, final one here, Steven. And again, who in the heck knows about old Alcorn, but maybe more of what you'll be looking to see from Mississippi State as they try to go to 3-0. They're trying to do better in the win column after 3 weeks than they did after 12 last fall. What a turnaround here.
Absolutely. And I think in a game like this, it's important for, I mean, the timing. You get Alcorn State a week after the big game against Arizona State, and you know, all that emotion and trying to get refocused, it's a good thing you're not playing an SEC opponent. So I love the timing of this game for Mississippi State. They should be able to take care of business. Alcorn State's an FCS opponent. I think you just want to see, you know, like, in a game like this, we saw what Tennessee did. We've seen, what some of these other teams in the SEC have done against FCS opponents. Just take care of business. Play a lot of people. Don't get anybody hurt. I think Chapin should be able to put up some huge numbers when he's in there. I'm also intrigued by the backup quarterbacks, too. Like, between Taylor and Cromanhawk, there's a lot of potential in that room. So we'll get maybe some opportunities to see these guys play in live reps again this week.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steven. So, hey, we went well over 90 minutes on this episode. Can't thank you enough for stopping by and dropping all this knowledge on us. Any other closing thoughts before we hop off here?
I think the one thing I was thinking about when we were talking about Tennessee's schedule, and I know we touched on this a bit, but it does feel like the preseason consensus of Georgia and Texas as the front runners, it feels like that top tier is more open than we think. Like, I think LSU is certainly deserves a spot there. We talked about Oklahoma. I'm interested to see Tennessee this week. So I guess my takeaway is that maybe the top of the SEC could be deeper than we think. Is that a possibility?
Certainly. And there's many teams, I think, you know, just under the surface too, that could fit that category. I know I like to make the jokes, but Auburn, you know, if they continue to progress on the offensive side of the football, we could perhaps throw them in there. Ole Miss, again, they've got a path that they can continue to improve. We can't write them off. Missouri, with their schedule, with their quarterback. South Carolina, if they get it rolling on the offensive side of the football. Of course, A&M, I think, belongs in that conversation. But this weekend will tell us more. And, hell, maybe even Vanderbilt, which might seem comical, but I don't know. I mean, who are they losing to? If they continue to get better and better, they're going to be in it for every game. So, and Alabama, of course, maybe the switch has been flipped after that national embarrassment. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, I think it's anyone's ball game right now. And man, I think this is going to be one heck of a year, and it's already been a really great 2 weeks of the season.
It really has, and we're going to get games this week with the Notre Dame, Texas A&M game, huge non-conference showdown. We got the conference play starting up. So, I mean, I've one of my favorite things of college football is that it's unpredictable and that you never know from week to week what's going to happen. If everything happened as the spreads or the rankings said, it'd be the most boring sport in the world. But we saw what happened with Mississippi State last week, beating Arizona State, to just like the depth in this conference. I mean, I think I've got 15 of the teams in the SEC, like in my top 30 to 35 of power ratings. So, I mean, it's an insanely deep year, but that top looks better to me, a little bit deeper than it did just a few weeks ago. So only going to be a crazy race here down the stretch for this conference.
Yeah, and I can't wait for it. Stephen, before you go, as always, will you remind the cousins how to follow you and how to find your work?
Absolutely. You can read all my work over at AthlonSports.com and follow me over on Twitter at AthlonSteven, Stephen LCFB, over on Facebook and Instagram.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much. Really appreciate you. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the Roush Hour. Can't wait to see what old Nicky's got to say after that Kentucky debacle. And then Cousin Shane will be on with us, of course, in the evening to preview all these games. So stay locked in. Like, subscribe, share. You know, that's the best way you can help us out. It's just, we're just trying to get this thing bigger and bigger. We're working overtime over here to give you guys the best content we possibly can. And all the support means everything. So we truly do appreciate you, and we'll catch you tomorrow on the next one. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.